Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 11th of November, Anno Domini 2017, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off shoes, don't get the blues, here comes the news. But before we do that, it is 11-11, it is Veterans Day, and I would like to give my own personal special thanks to all of our veterans, including our own illustrious Dave Enright.
Thank you, sir.
And my wife.
No, thank you, sir.
My wife, Shirley, is a veteran in our family.
Shirley, exactly. And God bless each and every one of you who stood in harm's way for our safety and security. But now on to computery stuff. There were widespread reports of internet outages Monday at Level 3, the Colorado-based company that builds and operates the infrastructure of fiber lines making up the internet's backbone, appeared to be experiencing failures across the country. The report started about 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Comcast, which it just barely was Eastern Standard Time by then, Comcast confirmed in a tweet that customers, which is how we get our news now, that customers of its Xfinity service, which relies on Level 3, were having issues with their internet. There were thousands of reports of Comcast internet problems throughout the day, according to the outage notification service Down Detector. Spectrum, AT&T, and Verizon customers also reported internet troubles, though in lower volumes. Television and phone services appeared to be largely unaffected. Maps of the Level 3 outages and Comcast outages were roughly identical through around 5 p.m. The hardest hit areas were primarily the Northeast and the West Coast, though there were outages throughout the country, particularly in large cities. At about 5 p.m., a representative from Level 3 made the following statement. On Monday, November 6th, our network experienced a service disruption affecting some customers with IP-based services. The disruption was caused by a configuration error. We know how important these services are to our customers. Our technicians were able to restore service within approximately 90 minutes. Most people had service restored by 5 p.m., which is 4 hours, not exactly 90 minutes. But there was a lot of anger and frustration throughout the week. One Xfinity customer said, "What if we'd been giving an online presentation to an important client? It could have cost us hundreds of thousands of dollars." So, to summarize, some idiot who wasn't paying attention fat-fingered a configuration file in a router. And then at the speed of the internet, it propagated itself to all the other routers, and Level 3 went down.
What day was this?
Monday.
Oh, because Wednesday, during our starter meeting, the internet went out at East High.
That's entirely separate.
I can't blame anyone then.
No, you can blame someone, but not them. Yeah. And that's got to be, that's, of course, the worst time.
Yeah.
You're presenting something to a computer club.
It happened just before break, and so we took all break long trying to get it back so we didn't get the second half of the meeting.
Yeah.
I've still got it recorded. I got to get it uploaded to YouTube.
But oh, there you go.
We couldn't live stream it.
Right. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Monday saw widespread internet outages, and your choices are, I was definitely affected, I might have had some issues, I don't use the internet during the day, and didn't notice a thing. So far, we've got about 26 votes and 28 votes. Didn't notice a thing is by far in the lead. Only one person was definitely affected, and only one other person said they might have been and might have had some issues. And three of you don't even use the internet during the day. But I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, the very first link there is the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And currently, at least, the very first poll discussion is 11 November 17. Monday saw widespread internet outages. And then come back And you can join us, of course, on the air. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. You know, as a system administrator for, many years, I understand how these things happen. On the other hand, somebody's head should roll. You don't test on a live system.
You think?
If you're going to make a change. Well, and it's hard. I get that. It's very hard on something as wide as one of the backbones of the internet.
But to do it during prime time, though. Hello. What about, say, like after 8 o'clock?
Well, yes. Yes, absolutely.
But with a global internet, it's prime time everywhere, somewhere.
Well, that's true. But the other thing, of course, is I'm sure it was a tiny, simple little change, and the person who made the change said, oh, it's just this one little thing. Let me just do it. It'll be done, and it'll be fine.
Yeah, because no biggie.
It's a change I've made a million times before.
That didn't work.
And he or she wasn't paying attention and fat-fingered it, and now you're done. It's too bad. But it points up how vulnerable the internet is. And I did a thing on television on Monday about it. They interviewed me, and one of their questions was, "What if it had been a terrorist attack?"
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first question was, "Was it?" We know who did it. We know how it was done. It was a mistake. It was fat fingered. It's not a big deal. And then they said, well, what if it had been a terrorist attack? I said, well, it's certainly possible. You know, when we created...
It's called the World Wide Web.
Right. And when we created the internet, we didn't think about security.
Mm-mm.
There were only... Well, at first, it was just the government.
Yeah.
But then they let some of our universities, the ones who were doing government work, they let them on as well. And all they were doing was sharing information.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody was trying to keep anybody else out because everybody wanted to share information. That's all they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And
very
so
innocent.
Right. And even today, security on every operating system is, except a couple, is bolted on. You know, they were never designed with security in mind. Kali and a couple of others were, but most were not. And it's very hard to bolt on working security after that.
And there's an even bigger threat looming that isn't making as much news as it should.
Yet.
It's sort of like the Mirai botnet from last year. It was actually a year ago the Mirai botnet was able to take out DynDNS. With 100,000 IoT cameras and DVRs, and by taking out DynDNS, they knocked Amazon off the air, off the internet. They knocked Netflix off the internet. You know, a surprising number of companies were using DynDNS.
Yep.
There's another one that's being called Reaper. There are more than 2 million devices in this Reaper botnet, and 100,000 devices was able to knock Amazon off the internet.
Yep.
What could 2 million devices do? So far, it's not doing anything but growing. It's adding about 10,000 new devices a day. But it's a little more insidious. It is using known vulnerable exploits in routers that people haven't patched.
Right.
So it's that router you bought at, you know, the big box electronics store, took home, plugged in, and have ignored for the last 5 years. Router companies issue updates. At least the better router companies do, but they don't auto update their devices. So it's up to you to go out and look for an update and install the update.
The problem I have, of course, is that many router companies don't update themselves. You have to download something, connect with a special program, and update it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And those programs are mostly available for Windows, some for Macs,
yeah,
nothing for Linux,
and some of the. Router updates. The routers are built and never updated. That $29 one you bought at the store will never get updated, and it's full of vulnerabilities, default usernames and passwords, known vulnerable attacks, and And so that's where this botnet is growing from, over 2 million devices. And a year ago, when Mirai was out and wreaking havoc, it shut down a lot of Europe. So we think it was a European group that was doing it because it happened too early. It happened too early in the morning to affect the U.S.
Right.
And by the time we woke up at 8 o'clock, we'd known about it and were able to patch it. But now 2 million devices commandeered by a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
The joke is, what could he do with it?
Anything he wants.
Yeah.
Anything he wants. He could take out, root servers. He could take out companies, push them off the internet.
And the thing to do is to just log into your router, go into the admin section, and check for an update.
Yep.
It's not that hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we don't do it. Nobody does it.
No.
The same thing, by the way, with your printer. Printers nowadays are computers that happen to also print.
And there's sort of a growing interest in prank hacking printers and make the screen where it says load letter, making it say something else.
Right, right, right.
But it means the bad guys can get in and use your printer as a foothold to the rest of the network.
Right. So when was the last time you updated the firmware in your printer?
Exactly.
Right? So it's an issue all the way around. And the problem is, back in the day, it used to be that system administrators did all this stuff for an organization. So you didn't think about it. But nowadays, in your home, you're the system administrator.
Yep.
Yeah.
You've got you've got edge connections. That is to say, things that connect you to the internet. And it's not just your computer you have to protect. You have to protect your router, your cable modem, your printers, your cameras. Lots of people have internet-connected cameras for security. Those have to be updated periodically. And we cannot rely on the company that sold it to you to do that.
And many of them have such horrible security that anyone who wants to can look at your camera feed because there's virtually no security built into the camera at all.
Right. Right. So, people, pay attention.
Yeah, you got to do a little more due diligence. But that's the whole thing. Folks get very complacent. And, once they get it set up, they think, oh, I'm good now.
Right. And for the average folks that just want to get on Facebook, they shouldn't have to know all this stuff.
Well, that's right.
Yeah,
but they do.
But they do.
And
yeah.
it's mm-hmm. a problem. Nobody, you buy a router from anybody. I could say Linksys or, any one of them, but it doesn't matter. They're all identical.
Mm-hmm.
They sell you a router, but they don't maintain it.
Nope.
They assume that if you were smart enough to buy it, you're smart enough to maintain it.
And people will always uncheck that notify me button during the setup. Don't, because they'll notify you when there's a firmware update.
Yeah, and then it can happen behind the scenes,
yeah.
too. You can just say, all right, yeah, let it go ahead and do it. So, yeah, your connection might be disrupted for, a few minutes as it reboots, and you got to get everything back up and online. But you know what? Your security has now been updated, and you're a lot safer.
Some of the newer IoT companies are designing in security from the background. The Ring doorbell, they've had several well-known auto updates that fixes problems that are found. They fix them before the problems are announced, usually within a day or so. The Nest thermostat does that too, but like anybody else, somebody made a mistake once with Nest and the thermostat shut off. And so it could have cranked your heat way up or cranked your heat off, and apparently they default to off.
Right.
Which I guess is okay. So in the middle,
you got to make a choice.
It's probably safer than your
right.
Your heater overheating and blowing up.
Right.
But yeah, so
suddenly your Mythbusters episode.
Yeah. Even the best companies, someone will make a mistake somewhere, and it's how they respond to the mistakes is more important.
Key.
Yeah.
And you have to admit that Level 3 did a pretty good job. They had much of it fixed within about 90 minutes and all of it fixed within about 4 hours. And when you consider the size of the problem, 4 hours is a snap of the fingers.
Yeah.
It really is. They did do an excellent job, but somebody really needs to get his or her head removed from their shoulders. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco. Larry from Rochester is hanging on the line quite patiently, I'm sure. And we'll be taking your calls as well on the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, it's Soundbites on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Larry from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. Now that you've scared the stuffings out of me, I will ask the question I had called for, and it seems that you segued into it. I'd like to know more about the, I guess, the crack virus, what I could do to protect my home from it, and is it that big a deal from a home user's standpoint? Been a little spooked this week about even using Wi-Fi in the house. I did a little bit of research. I could find some information about using a VPN network, but I'm not sure just what, you know, how I use that, you know, what vendor or anything like that. So I was just wondering if you could talk about that a few minutes and give us a hand on how to protect ourselves from that. And I can listen offline and appreciate all you guys do. And I am a member.
Thank you. That's what we'd like to hear. Thanks, Larry.
Thank you.
Bye. All right. So the basic idea behind crack is that in your wireless network, which we were just talking about, there is a protocol called WPA2, which is supposed to be the hot, exciting one you're supposed to use.
Right.
Unfortunately, there is a vulnerability. They're calling it crack, K-R-A-C-K, that lets attackers easily, even though it's supposed to be encrypted, yada, 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 it allows attackers to eavesdrop on wireless connections, and that's bad enough, but it also lets people inject data into the wireless stream, which lets them install malware or modify web pages or just change what you're actually seeing.
Yeah, the vulnerability is in the encryption setup. So when you join a network, your computer and the base station you're connecting to have to decide on network protocols. And all that's done in the clear until we say, all right, we'll use this protocol. And there, it's a four-step handshake, and there's a vulnerability in step three. So all the major vendors have already updated their OSs. It is a problem in the client side, not the router side. So it's your computer OS. Fortunately, Mac OS and Windows were not vulnerable because they didn't do the implementation exactly right.
Yeah, they did it wrong, and so they aren't vulnerable.
Google has updated the latest version of Android. So if you're not running Oreo, you're screwed.
Right.
Apple has updated OS 11 on all of their iDevices. So if you're not running OS 11, you're screwed. That's one of the things about you need to keep up with the latest updates, because many vendors don't update the previous versions of things. And it only stops the Wi-Fi encryption if you go to an encrypted website with TLS, HTTPS, that is still safe.
Right.
So the general thing about going to a coffee shop and don't do your banking because someone could eavesdrop on you. Now that's sort of bigger with almost any Wi-Fi access point, but it is a physical access. So they have to be within a few hundred feet of your access point, your base station in your house, in order to try to do this attack.
Right. And if you're online, right, and somebody like pulls into your driveway and tries to break in, you're already online, you're already connected, so you are safe.
Yeah.
It's only when you shut down and then reconnect in the morning. So every morning, check your driveway before you turn on your computer, or just leave it on.
Right. And then make sure you install your latest updates. If you have multiple access points in your house, a lot of people will have a booster or an extender.
Amplifier, yeah.
That Rage second extender. Booster is actually a client to the first one.
Right.
So in that case, you do need to update the firmware in your router. So in addition to some of the other, you know, warnings we gave you earlier about updating your router, most of the major router companies are also updating the firmware in their routers that do can also act as clients rather than that it's not server. It's a funny name. In Wi-Fi parlance, yeah, the host of the Wi-Fi. What's almost worse than crack is a different attack that doesn't have as cool a name, so it's not getting talked about as much. Roka.
R-O-C-A.
And that is a vulnerability in hardware key encryption. There's a company called Infineon that makes chips that generate keys for creating encryption. They made a mistake, rough estimates are about 300 million of these keys have been distributed worldwide. And so if you use a hardware hardware device to generate a key for, say, a business or the Google Authenticator or YubiKey, something like that, the hardware keys from Infineon have a vulnerability. And that's a problem because we're sort of relying on these keys to create our encryption. So they are trying to replace all those with firmware updates. But again, most people may not know they have an Infineon chip, and they may not have known to register it to get the notice that there is an update.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There is a website I'm trying to find that allows you to put in your public key, and it will tell you if it's a vulnerable key or not.
And note he said your public key.
Right.
You have two keys. One is public, one is private. You can give anyone on earth your public key. That's not a problem.
Right.
But keep your private key one. Well,
oh, you
private.
Said private.
Yeah. And there are countries. Estonia has produced almost a million ID cards. It's their national ID card, and anyone living in Estonia or working in Estonia can get one of these ID cards. And it's a digital identity.
Yep.
With the public and private keys, and the public key is vulnerable.
Yeah, so it's a real problem, and right now we're seeing it mostly overseas because they've gotten ahead of us.
They're way ahead of us in security.
Yeah.
But we're as vulnerable as they are, and so we need to be careful and aware also. All right, back to the I hope that answers the question. Back to the phones, our next caller is Mark. From Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hi. Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Just wanted to congratulate you on meeting your goal for the year.
Thank you so much. We are honored that each and every one of you so generously stepped up and made it happen. We appreciate it deeply. Thanks.
And I can smugly say I was part of it.
There you go.
Anyways, I wanted to say two things. One thing is people have to be aware with their wireless printers that most of the major companies that you deal with will warn you there's a firmware update. My Epson comes up probably 4 or 5 times a year with a firmware update.
Yeah, if your printer has a screen, it can show you on the printer. But
right.
If you don't have a screen, then you have to have signed up for email notifications.
Or you never look at the screen.
True.
Because mine is an actual program, and it pops up, and it says software available, and you click on it, and it tells you exactly if it's firmware or if it's related to the software you install.
Nice.
Now, I know a lot of people don't go through and install a lot of software, but I get in the habit of installing it all, seeing what it does, and then going back and uninstalling with Revo what I don't need or want.
Right.
But it's safer to do that than try to go through and try to figure out what it does before you install it. So,
yep.
And mine warns me right up on the screen. It pops up, and it says, you know, updates available, and it tells you what they are, firmware or if they're software related. And I keep mine up to date. I just know some of them get real tricky with their firmware updates, and they put something in the firmware that doesn't allow you to use aftermarket cartridges.
Right.
Which a lot of people then don't want to update their firmware because they don't want you using aftermarket cartridges.
Right. No, I get that.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a cat and mouse game.
Yep. Absolutely.
So, but, you know, very, very, very important to keep your printer, especially if it's wireless, with the firmware up to date.
Yep.
Because it's just another little hole into your computer.
That's exactly right, into your whole network.
Yep.
Thank you.
Everything connected, you know. Second of all, my Chromebook, Samsung Chromebook 3, got its update for Android apps last night.
Oh, nice.
Oh, how cool.
Good for you.
I got to check mine now, then.
Yep. It came up last night, and it's really cool. So far, very slick. It's a little spotty on some things, but I'm sure they'll work on it now that it's installed. So,
right.
But Samsung Chromebook 3 finally after over a year of talking about it got its Android apps.
Nice. I have to say a little bit of bragging for we Chromebook owners.
Mm-hmm.
During the last break, I updated my Chromebook. It was that simple. But yeah, I'm excited for you. You've got a touchscreen?
No, I do not have a touchscreen.
See, that's what makes it a little hard.
Yeah. I think it's a little more difficult that way, but it's still there and with a little patience, it's not too bad.
Right. Now, how do you tell? How did you tell that it had updated?
Well, I had a regular update, and then it rebooted. And after it rebooted and I signed in, I got a secondary screen that popped up and said, this update allows you to run Android apps.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm going to have to check mine.
Nice.
It installed the software and it rebooted.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just had to go into settings and activate the Google Play Store.
Right.
Yeah, that was it, yeah. And I activated that. I turned a little switch on and we had a little icon in my shelf and I was ready to go.
Nice.
Sweet. Yeah.
Well done, you. Congratulations.
Thank you. I've got my apps.
Well, you're 50% of the way there.
I appreciate it, Mark. Thank you for the notice, because like I say, mine is on. I just haven't checked it in a few days. I've been so busy with other stuff.
Well, apparently, I tried to update this yesterday, and there was no update, but there was an update last night, because today it updated.
Okay. Probably a change notice somewhere. To let you know, and
right,
I want to go back.
I just didn't go look.
Yeah, and I want to go back to something you said earlier about your wireless printer. Many printers have a mode called Wi-Fi Direct, and that's a convenience. So you can walk into somebody's house or into an office and print to their printer without needing a password.
Right.
Turn off Wi-Fi Direct.
Yeah.
Because that means the bad guy can access your printer and get a link in.
That's
TVs
exactly
have the same thing.
Yeah, most of the new smart TVs that have Wi-Fi built in, you join it through Wi-Fi Direct rather than actually joining your network with a passcode. Now, one of the tips we've heard is that when you do put in cameras or IoT devices, put them on your guest network, not your primary network. So when somebody does get in, they theoretically can't get to your main network.
Right.
And if you really can... use a three router, the three dumb router setup where you actually have a second router creating your guest network. Many routers have a public and a private network built into the one router, but since it's one router, there's potential that the public network could see the private network and vice versa. So if you have two physically separate routers, and two separate networks, that's the safest thing to do.
And, of course, you want to set them to different frequencies.
Different frequencies.
Different channels.
Different, and different IP ranges, too. Put one on a 10 dot and the other on a 192 dot, so then you can be really sure who's connected to what.
Exactly.
And everybody's got to remember that also your tablets have Wi-Fi
phones.
Direct.
Yep.
So, it's not just PCs
that used to be
the potential problem here.
Right. It used to be that Macs automatically shared their hard drives. I used to be able to log on at our IT and look at it and see 50, 60 laptops all sharing their C drives. What the heck?
Mm-hmm. To make it convenient. And then some update somewhere, was it Windows XP? Was it Service Pack 1 or something like that? And Mac, I forget what version it was. The file sharing was turned off by default.
Finally.
Finally, yeah.
Now they made it super hard to even get it to do it now.
Well, they added AirDrop, which is supposed to be easier than setting up file sharing, and it does have confirmation, two-way confirmation. You can't receive a file from someone unless you allow it. In fact, I was at a outdoor concert a couple months ago in Parrington, and someone kept trying to send me pictures on my phone. And I kept saying deny, deny, and I finally had to turn off AirDrop, and I kept hollering out, wrong Steve, because my phone is named Steve's phone. So they were trying to send it to another Steve, and I kept getting their picture. I should have got them, edited them, and sent them back.
And when I was at RIT, I named my printer Wastebasket, and nobody ever printed it to it again.
Yep. Yeah, that was the fancy color printer that people would print to.
Yep.
Yep.
Nick, you're slick.
Thank you.
Another good one.
Thank you.
Yep. That's another good one. I like that. And I also, like I said, I use your other one trick where I use the three tones on my answering machine.
There you go. I love to hear that.
I constantly learn these little sneaky tricks from you, and I like it.
Thanks. Well, thanks very much, Mark.
You're welcome. Have a good day, and check for your apps.
I will. Thanks.
Okay, yep.
My Chromebook won't do it. It's too old.
Oh.
All right, that's it. We're going to take a short recess here. But don't go away. We'll be back with a whole lot more of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Victor from Irondequoit on the line. Hi, Victor. What's up?
Hi, guys. I've got an HP DeskJet 2540 series printer. It doesn't want to scan all of a sudden. When I go to the screen, it says scan a document or photo. I come up with another screen that says, it used to give multiple choices. Now it only gives scan to file. It used to give scan to email, scan to some other things. And so when I click on scan, I get an error message that I'm not getting now. Oh, it says an error occurred while scanning, which doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean anything to anybody.
No.
I hate most error messages.
Yeah. I mean, I've uninstalled it and reinstalled it several times. Right now, I'm downloading drivers. I'm hoping that might do it.
Well, first, of course, reboot the printer.
Yeah, I've unplugged it and let it sit for a half hour and plugged it back in. I've done that before.
Can you do a copy from the printer itself without involving the computer? Just to make sure the scanner's still working.
Scanning. Okay, it does. I've done that, too. Okay. Yeah, I want to make sure. And it's connected with a USB cable. I've read on some forums where they said that people were having problems with the USB cable, and they didn't have any problems wireless. I don't know how to get to wireless.
Well, I don't own a specific desk jet, but somewhere in the setup, if you keep going down, and you might have to actually, I'm embarrassed to have to say this, you might have to break out the manual. I don't know where that is anymore.
Exactly, I don't either.
Right. What you can do is go through the menus, and usually there is a wireless menu or a network menu, and in the network menu is wireless, and you may simply not have it turned on. It is very possible that you cannot send something via email because you're not connected to the network directly.
I don't have a problem printing from the computer.
But you said it's connected by a USB.
Yes, it is connected by a USB.
So printing is one thing. Being on the network is something entirely else.
Yeah.
So, for example, I have a Brother printer at home, and it is on the network. So I can print from any one of my devices anywhere in the house. I can scan to about a third of my devices from anywhere in the house. But all of that is reliant on the printer being on the network, not connected to a specific machine.
Nick, would that be in preferences or customize your printer? How would I find that?
Well, theoretically, I don't have a DeskJet 2540 series.
Yeah.
But theoretically, you will either have something under customize or there will actually be a network menu somewhere. And you may just have to wander around through your menus till you find it.
And this is not in the Windows printer queue. This is in the printer web server. So you open your web browser, you know, Chrome.
Well, not if he's not connected to the network, he
doesn't.
That's
true, right? Yeah.
Within the printer?
Well, within yes, printer what itself, you have to right? do. Where, yes, I'm talking about doing this directly at the printer.
You may have to
printer.
Do, there's an HP...
at the printer itself.
HP Wi-Fi setup program you have to load.
And
separately.
Sometimes finding that is not the easiest thing. You got to, with HP, you've got to worm your way down through it. And the best thing you might want to do to help you out with this and make it a little bit simpler is Google it. Google it as far as setting up the network printer for that particular, you know, get the manual. It'll show you usually a breakdown of the menu and where you've got to go to set that up.
Okay.
To save you a lot of time and grief, because sometimes it can get frustrating on what's selecting it, what's not selecting it, and, you know, making the changes and keeping them.
Well, we've actually found that.
All right. I'll post that.
And Steve will post the link to it.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, great.
You have to have, obviously, a running network.
Yep.
And you do have to have a Windows computer, which is connected to the same network.
And I have a Windows computer connected.
To the network?
Yes.
Okay. So basically, and like I said, Steve's going to put this on, so I'll just go through it real fast. Okay. You turn on the printer. There is a wireless button that you have to
it flashes all the time.
There you go.
Before it just would be blue.
Right. What you do is you hold that down until it flashes.
Yeah, flashing means it's not set up. When it's
right.
solid, that means it is working.
Right.
Right.
It was solid before, Steve.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, the last couple of days, it's been flashing.
Right. Somehow, something happened that where you lost it. But that's easy enough to fix. Just follow the directions on this page.
Okay.
Which seems to have an error message in Arabic across the bottom, which is very interesting. There was a notice that they're having problems with their website.
It's rotating languages.
Yeah.
I've got it in English.
Oh, there you go. So at any rate, the idea here is that you follow these instructions step by step. Please do everyone a favor. Read it over first.
Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, read it once all the way through until you understand it, and then go through it. What I usually do is I actually write out a checklist. Once I've read it through a second time and write the checklist.
Print the instructions and then check off each step.
Right, and
if the printing half works, then you can print the imprint.
Then you can print it later, for the next thing you set up.
Well, yeah. It just helps you get it set up in your mind of the procedure you got to go through.
Yep.
And instead of trying to do it as you're reading, because sometimes there can be time factors.
And then you save that checklist in case it ever happens again.
Yeah. Now, can you scan from the computer it's physically connected to with the USB cable?
No, that's my problem. Right now, I pressed and held that flashing button, and right now in my, where it says copy, how many copy numbers you make, it's got a Wi-Fi signal. And should I unplug the USB cable?
No, you want to read the instructions first.
Okay, I'll read them first.
And follow that.
Sometimes it has to be USB first, sometimes it doesn't.
Right.
Read the instructions. Don't cowboy this.
Okay, and you got a link set up then.
Yeah. Well, but this won't solve the scanning problem. This will just connect it to the
Well,
to
he
the
didn't
network.
Have a problem actually scanning.
Yes.
He had a problem scanning wirelessly, right?
No, scanning period, right?
Scanning period. It wouldn't scan period.
Oh. Well, all right. So we've solved one of your two problems.
And you said you uninstalled the printer, or did you just remove the print queue?
No, I uninstalled it using Revo Uninstaller several times, and then reinstalled everything again. And that didn't seem to do it either. I thought it would.
Yeah, that usually does. And
yeah.
and you reinstalled it with the latest driver.
Well, right now I'm downloading the latest drivers. As a matter of fact, they downloaded. Okay, now I got to find them and then install them.
Yeah,
maybe they won't do it, but I'm going to look at your link.
And like I say, if that doesn't fully solve it, go back, Google, you know, as far as setting up the rest of the network.
Yeah.
In the manual.
I'll give it a shot.
All right.
All right, thank you, guys.
Yep. All right, thanks.
I don't see enough of a picture of this printer. Some printers that have a front screen, you can set everything up on the screen.
Let me go to the scanning problem.
Yeah.
Several places on the internet are saying you can't. They're having trouble scanning via USB, but scanning with Wi-Fi works perfectly. So
that's,
solve the Wi-Fi
that's
issue.
That's opposite of what I usually find.
Right, right. I completely understand that. But maybe, and so let's start there and pretend that'll be what works. Fix the Wi-Fi issue, and that may let you scan.
Whew. An error occurred. That's, oh, ah, four, not found. So the
There's
link,
an error.
The link to HP's answer is not found.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich, also from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Rich, what's up?
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. I listening to your comments before about wireless and everything else, I'm looking into probably getting a wireless camera for the house, not necessarily for security, but watching my dog and maybe set it up to look out the window when there's a storm or something when I'm not home. Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of stuff. What kind of trouble am I getting myself into, or is there anything I can do to help myself or look for with purchasing an item like this?
Well, look for one that has some decent security where you can set it up and maybe pick the IP addresses that will read it or the MAC addresses that'll read it. Yeah. I got one, and I can't think of the name of the company. Z something. So something starts with a Z. I'll think about it. Maybe it'll come to me. But what this camera does is there's a choice that says local network only. So you have to be on my network to view the camera, which means I can't view it from like here.
But, yeah, many of the
but
cameras
I don't care.
Yeah, many of the cameras you find now are designed to be remote, so you can check in on the dog when you're at work.
Right.
Looking at it on my Android phone or maybe a computer at work or something like that.
Don't buy the cheapest camera you can find.
That's first.
Because they generally would not have very good security. And even the ones that say they have security, there was a vulnerability where the address you type in to get to your camera, you just change a digit and you get someone else's camera.
Yep.
The actual one that I'm looking at is a Wangs View. I don't know how to pronounce that right. WANS View Wireless 1080p camera. And I don't know if that means anything to you or not.
Well, WANS View, you're viewing over the WAN.
Yeah.
The Wide Area Network.
I've never seen that, no.
Okay.
It's a Shenzhen. So they're one of the bigger camera manufacturers, and they are one of the most often discovered vulnerabilities.
Okay.
So you want to make sure there's a firmware update option available, but it's hard to do that without getting the camera first.
Sure. Now, is there anything specifically that you could think of or that I would need to do, we'll say, specifically, other than saying that this has, you know, securities and things like that on it for me to set? But is there things that I should do to my router or anything like that?
Well, as we mentioned earlier, if you have a guest network option in your wireless router, it's safest to put the camera on the guest network. So if someone does get into it, they can't see anything else in your network. They just see what that camera sees.
Yeah, normally there's not any computers that are on during that time. I mean, if I'm not home, usually our computers are shut down and, you know, they wouldn't get into something like that, I guess. You know, none of the computers are on for them to read any of my information, we'll say.
Right.
But I guess one of the problems that someone had mentioned to me before was just somebody getting into the camera and saying, oh, let me look around. Nobody's home. I can go, you know, raid the house.
So when you set the camera up, change the default username and password. Put your own username and password in.
Okay.
Because almost all of them are admin and password.
Well, right.
And that's how people get in. I've had really good luck with Amcrest cameras, AmCrest. But there's a dozen different probably 100 different manufacturers with really good cameras.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm just looking for something standalone that mm-hmm. I could, you know, plop on a desk or a counter or something just to be able to, you know, look around with. I don't yeah. need to, you know, set up cameras around the house for a security system, if you will.
There's kind of like three general types of cameras. There's a fixed camera that just points, and they're usually the cheapest. And then there's a pan-tilt camera, where you can actually pan around and tilt. And then sometimes pan-tilt zoom, so you might see them named PTZ. Most of them have a digital zoom. Some will have a hardware zoom. And then you can choose whether you want indoor or outdoor.
Yeah, that's kind of like what this one says, I believe, with a bunch of features of panning, tilting, a night vision, yeah. 1080p video.
And those are pretty common. Nest from Google makes some pretty decent cameras. They're a little more on the expensive side. That's, we hate to say it, but that's sometimes how you can tell the company takes a little more effort in building the device. It's mm-hmm. a little more expensive.
Right. There's a I'm looking at the specs for this camera, and it has some nice features, two-way audio and a fairly fast system. The problem is when you say what are the account permissions, it just says three levels.
Right. All right. Well, I appreciate the information, and it helps me a little bit. I'll just search around a little bit more and see what else I can find, and yep. maybe get some information that way.
Perfect. Good luck.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. We're going to take a slightly longer break. You've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but we'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 59 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we go to the phones, we were talking about wireless cameras and setting them up on a separate network. And I thought, okay, if you had a second router that you did not connect to the internet, it was just stuff on that router.
Mm-hmm.
I can still think of at least two ways to hop from that router to your network.
Well, that's one of the things that I've seen talked about with the three dumb routers. You've got one router connected to the internet, and then you've got one router for your stuff, one router for your other stuff. Ubiquiti makes a really neat the Edge Router X for $50. It gives you five completely isolated Ethernet ports.
Oh, interesting.
And so, you know, it's enterprise grade. You get isolated ports. So it's probably
that's good for
one in and four out. Right. One in and four out, and then you put one wireless router on one of the Ethernet ports.
Yeah, but once it's wireless, I can hop to it.
Right. But then you put your other your wired router on another port,
and I can still hop to that. Once it's wireless, it's a radio signal.
Right.
I can get to it. Anyway, to the phones. Our next caller is Jerry from Irondequoit, New York. A lot of Irondequoits tonight. Hiya, Jerry. What's up?
Hi. Yes, us Irondequoiters certainly have a lot of problems today. good afternoon, fellas. I'm sure I'm not the only one with this problem. I'm Microsoft Windows 10.1, and what my problem is their latest version, 1709, I guess it's called, Windows Feature Update, they keep telling me it's ready to install, and I've run the Windows troubleshooter numerous times, and it says there's no problem. Everything's resolved, but it won't install on the computer. And Windows keeps saying, you know, it's ready to install. I keep getting a pop-up message on it. I hope there's an easy solution to it, but there probably isn't.
Okay.
You're not alone. I guess we'll start with that.
We'll start with that. But do you get any sort of error message at all?
No, there's no error message. And then they've got their Windows troubleshooter, and I've run that numerous times, and it'll say problem solved, and it'll be an all green check mark on it there, and I haven't had any problems installing it on the computer until I hit this latest, I guess it's 1709, their very latest update there. And other than keeping on, now is this something Windows can repair as time goes on, or I'm stuck with this continual pop-up here that it's ready to install? And then when I do try to install it, what happens is it restarts, and then an orange window comes up, and then you see this time machine going and going. And after like 3 minutes, it goes back to, you know, the regular sign-in page.
All right. What antivirus program are you running?
The what kind?
Antivirus.
I've got the cable. Oh, the antivirus is the Norton Symantec.
Uh-huh. Try, now, be very careful. Disable it. Run the update. And then make sure you re-enable it.
Okay.
What we're finding is that any number of people, that we're seeing this more often with Sophos, but also with Norton and a couple of others, the update is going to change system files. And the antivirus is going, oh, no, you are not.
Okay.
Yeah, it's trying to protect your machine.
Right, and it's trying to protect your machine, but somewhere along the line, Microsoft and Norton didn't talk to each other about this update. So
it's very tough to decide whether this is a virus attacking your system or it's a major system update changing your system.
So try disabling Norton and then installing the update. But please,
is there an easy way that to disable?
Yes,
where do I go to try to do that?
If you go into the lower right-hand corner, you'll see your Norton there. If you right-click on it, it'll give you the option to disable.
It might say pause.
Oh. Yeah, or pause. But usually it'll say disable, and it'll ask you how long, till the next reboot, maybe an hour, or, you know, indefinite.
And you may want to say...
Say, give it a couple hours.
A couple hours, because during the Windows update, it's going to take some time. And it's going to reboot a couple of times. And you need to keep the AV off.
Yeah, might give you an option to say 1 hour, 2 hour, 4 hours, six hours.
Okay. Maybe you can help me with that. I clicked on it. It's got open file location, run administrator, troubleshoot, compatibility, pin to start, restore previous versions, and... I don't know exactly.
Did you right click?
Right click on the taskbar on the far right, not in the system tray area of the taskbar.
Oh, okay. Far right. I've got. Let's see.
Do you see the Norton
logo?
Logo.
A little logo there. Okay.
Right click on that.
Okay, it's got open Norton antivirus, run quick scan search, run live update. View recent history, get support, turn on silent mode, disable auto protect. I guess that's what you're saying right there.
Yeah, there you go.
Disable auto protect, and let's see what it says here then. It's got turning off auto protect, turns off antivirus download. Okay, and then it's got select duration.
There you go.
And 1 hour, 5 hours, whatever.
Select five hours just for the heck of it.
Okay, now when I'm doing this, nothing will attack the computer, right?
No.
Well, it could. That's the risk. If you happen to be unlucky enough to get a virus attack while you're updating Windows, there's almost nothing you can do.
Well, and generally these days those things are coming in through web pages and email. So just don't go on the web or use your email during the time it's updating.
Right.
And then you can turn that back on from the same icon once the update finishes.
Okay. Now, again, if I try to, and I won't keep you much longer. I know you're busy. But thanks for the help. This gives me some hope that this Windows version will download. But now, again, if it doesn't download, I can just go back to this and click on 15 minutes or whatever.
Turn it back on.
Yeah, just turn it back on. Yeah, exactly.
And I've posted a link on our website at soundbites.org on some tips to do. And if turning off the AV doesn't work, the next step is often to download the update, the full updater manually. Don't let Windows Update do it. Download it yourself from the Windows 10 update page.
Right, but do this first.
Okay.
That's a lot easier.
Yeah, do this first and see what happens.
Okay. I'm going to click on 5 hours and hope it latest downloads then.
There you go.
Okay. Thanks for the help.
Appreciate it. Okie doke. Yeah, it's an interesting issue, and nobody solved it exactly. If you allow certain updates to occur and the bad guys spoof those updates, what's the point of having your antivirus?
Yeah.
Right? But if you don't allow those updates, then you can't update, duh.
And so Norton could say, oh, you're running Windows Update? I better turn myself off.
Right.
Until the first bad guy names their virus Windows Update.
Right, right. Makes it look like it uses the signature of it. And so you doing it manually is the best way to do it, except that you then have to make sure you turn it back on again when you're done.
I think Norton, if I remember right, the next time you boot, it says, hey, I'm off. Do you want to turn me back on?
I think it does. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Hello, Nick. How are you?
Peachy, we've broken out of Irondequoit. We're on to Brighton.
Yeah, I know. You've headed south where it's a lot warmer.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have a question about Google Drive.
Sure.
I have the free version, and I'm told I've used up my space.
Right.
Now, here's a question for you, and that is, I have, you know, I can also go with OneDrive.
Sure.
Okay, and I can move some of my files to OneDrive to free up space. But the other question is, I know I can convert whatever Word and Excel files are in Google Drive to Google Docs, and that will not count against my maximum.
Exactly.
Is there a way to do that universally, or do you have to do it file by file?
Well, there's a way to make it that when you upload something to it, it happens automatically.
But once it's in Google Drive, you would have to do it file by file?
Pretty much, yeah. Mm. I don't know of anything that does it universally.
Right. You can do it on the website.
Excuse me?
If you log into the Google Drive website, in the settings icon, there's a convert command. I'm trying to see. So what you do is you drag all of your Word files out of the Google folder from your computer.
Yeah.
And then go into the Google Drive settings and turn on convert, and then drag them all back, and they'll get converted.
Yeah, but I would have to, well, there are a lot of files. Yeah. I would have to do that, I guess, per folder. You know, there's a bunch of folders in Google Drive.
Drag them all out and then drag them back after you turn on the convert.
All right. So I would have to go to...
There's another way to bulk update them.
All right. I'm just trying to see if I'm at Google Drive settings. Okay. Because I'm right there right now.
Yeah, it says under the gear icon, go to upload settings and enable convert Office files to Google Doc format.
All right. Okay. Storage, convert uploads.
Yep.
Well, it says convert. I've checked it. I've checked that box. It says convert uploaded files to Google Doc editor format.
Right.
So,
but that doesn't change the ones that are already there.
So I have to take them out and then put them back.
That would certainly work.
Yeah, but there
might be a faster way. We're both looking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to say, how many docs do you have to fill up 15 gigabytes?
I have photos also.
Ah, yeah, photos.
Well, okay. Photos are a separate issue.
Right. So how do you tell, where's that, the Google dashboard? You can tell how much of each file type you're using.
Well, right in Google Drive, you can go down to, if you hover over upgraded storage, the lower right, it will tell you how much you use of Drive, how much you use of Google Photos, and how much you use of Gmail. Now, in terms of Google...
Yeah, I'm not using anything of Google Photos, and I'm only using 243 megabytes of Gmail.
Right. So here's the deal. If you move those files, those pictures, to Google Drive, and they are less than 16 megapixels in size...
Yeah.
Then they will not count against your storage.
Okay. Well, you're talking about 16 megapixels per
picture.
Picture. Yeah. I don't have. I think I have almost none. So it must all be in the docs.
Right. Right. And it does count against it in the drive, but it doesn't count against it in Google Photos.
Oh, all right. So if I moved my photos to Google Photos.
Right.
That should work. Or it might work.
Right. It should work.
Okay. All right. So what I got to do is go to my drive, find my pictures, which I'm trying to see right now as we talk. Ah, and then I can just move those to Google Photos.
Right. Move them out of the Google Drive folder and then use Google Photos to sync them to Google Photo rather than Google Drive.
Okay, I can't just move them. I have to actually physically move them out of the drive.
Right.
Okay. All right. I was thinking I'm in Drive now, and I tried to slide it over to Google Photos, and it didn't want to do that.
Right. Now, have you upgraded to the new Google Backup and Sync program?
That's a good question. I see something trying to sync.
Yeah. And Google Backup and Sync gives you more options about what you're backing up and what you're syncing.
Yeah. All right. Well, I may try that with Google doing that with the photos and see. Let me just see if I can see how many megs there are.
We got to take a break.
Go ahead. Nick, thanks very much.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody.
I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Smiley, our friend Smiley from Rochester, New York, on the line. What's up, Smiley?
Hey, I don't know how many problems you've solved since I dialed to solve that one. but it's that guy that was having trouble with that Microsoft 10 Windows update.
Yeah.
What I do is I keep Microsoft's update catalog bookmarked. And when I have one, I take them numbers, you know, like it says, oh, it can't install this.
Right.
I take those numbers, I put them in there, do a search, make sure I download the ones for my version, and hopefully, you know, that I'm sure they are. And then they'll come down as a .msi,
yep.
I'm pretty sure.
The manual update, yeah.
Right.
And then you... after you get them all, or what, you know, even if it's only one, but I've done it. I've had three or four at a time I've had to get. And then you click on them, and it will either install them, or in the process it'll tell you it's not applicable for your version. And that's the problem right now with that one that they're trying to download now.
Oh, maybe. That's very possible. Thanks.
So, so they should probably, or you should probably have a hint that they use that Microsoft update catalog and then put the numbers in. It'll be a whole lot quicker, I think.
Perfect. Thanks a lot.
Right.
Thank you, Smiley. Excellent. Thanks.
Right. Bye-bye.
And I just noticed on Microsoft's download site, you cannot download the previous version of Windows 10 anymore.
Right.
You can only download the Fall Creators Update.
Right. And that's going to go away.
In the last couple of weeks, the previous version was there, too.
Yep.
Now, what was the last one?
Fall Creators Update.
That's the current one. What was the last one? Had a fun name.
Yeah.
They added more photo editing tools on it, and it was something, the graphics update or something like that.
Something.
But, so it's sometimes downloading the updates manually helps. The problem is that Apple and Microsoft release so many updates, trying to find them all to download manually is tough, and so that's why the auto update usually works.
Right.
Usually.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hey, Nick. Was listening earlier, didn't catch all of it, but I've been looking at the website. I've gone and checked my router and my HP all-in-one. I have them on automatic updates, so I think I'm in good shape there. Looked at the how to check for the virus, and it's talking about my public key. What is that, and how do you find it?
Here we go. Okay, there are when you have a network. When you have security, there are multiple ways to do it. The approved method nowadays is to use a private and a public key. The private key, the secret is in the name.
The Diffie-Hellman key exchange.
It's a what?
The Diffie-Hellman key exchange.
It's the Diffie-Hellman key exchange.
That Whit Diffie, explaining in court, lost the case.
Yeah.
I'm the guy that invented it, and he still lost the case.
He lost the case. But the basic idea is that you have two keys, a private key and a public key. You can, of course, give the public key to anybody. Keep the private key private. What happens is when you encrypt something with the private key, it can only be decrypted with the public key. So if I give you my public key and then send you something that's encrypted and you cannot decrypt it with my public key, it didn't come from me.
All right, let's take a step back and where does the key come from and what's it part of?
Now, hold on one second. So basically, this is the way it works. Now, where do you get your public key and your private key? Well, they are generated for you when your system installs.
On my computer or?
Yes.
On my network?
No, on your computer.
On my computer, okay.
So every computer should have a public and private key. Now, Steve was just looking at his Mac, and it does not.
I didn't have a user-generated key.
Right, you had the network-generated key, which is what's required for wireless.
Right, and for in the Mac, the keychain is where you can go and look and see all your keys.
Right.
Every website and every internet service I use has generated public keys that go with my private key.
Right. So basically the idea is this. When you first install your operating system, it generates a public-private key pair for itself to use with wireless networking and HTTPS and all of that stuff. So you don't have to worry about that. That's done for you and works automagically.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to use a public-private key for some other purpose, then you would need to hand-generate it. There are programs on every operating system that let you generate your public and private key.
And it typically would be something like you want to have encrypted signed email so that the person at the other end knows it came from you.
Right.
You would use something like PGP to encrypt your email and then include the public key to the other end, and then they would know it actually came from you.
Right. PGP stands for pretty good privacy.
The problem with most of these, especially email encryption, because we get these questions a lot, is that you have to physically meet with the other person to exchange your keys.
No, the public key can be given to anybody.
Right, but they need your private key to test against it.
No, you send it with your private key. They use your public key.
Right.
And the theory is only your public key will decrypt something encrypted with your private key. So they are sure that it came from you. That's the idea behind it. Now, if you use something like Gmail, they do all that for you in the background.
Right. The problem, so most of the major email services encrypt your email between your computer and them. The problem becomes if you send from Gmail to AOL, for example, it's decrypted along the way.
Must be. Because right. Gmail, AOL doesn't have...
AOL encrypts from you to AOL. But mail server to mail server is mostly not encrypted.
Right. So if I send Steve something to his Gmail account from my Gmail account, it's encrypted all the way. But if I send something to you on your AOL account, it's decrypted somewhere along the way. But again, all of that happens automatically. You only have to generate a public-private key pair if you are wanting to use some program like, say, Thunderbird and still have encrypted mail from your personal machine to their personal machine.
Okay.
So if you're not doing something...
Before we glaze my eyes any further...
Well, this is a very serious and tough
thing. Yeah, I had a question from a lawyer client this week. How secure is email? It's not.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, but you've got this thing, KeyChess test for local vulnerability, and it wants you to put in your key. I've never generated a key.
Right. Okay?
The systems are all doing it for me,
right,
based on what I just heard you say. All right, so now the question becomes is, first of all, do I have to worry about this local vulnerability since all my wireless devices are on automatic firmware updates?
If you are updating, you should. Well, I would check with whoever made your router and that specific brand of router. I would go on their website and make sure that there was an update in the last 3 days. That did that for you. So,
It's Linksys and no.
Yeah. So I would check with them as to whether or not or when or if or whatever. Mine's a Cisco router and it did update. So, I'm in pretty good shape. But, in terms of Linksys, I honestly just don't know. I can't keep track of everybody.
And
so,
sometimes it can be an older model won't get the update and a newer model will.
Right. So I would check with their website.
But DDRW and what's the other one? Tomato?
Doesn't matter.
Both of the open source router software you can install on routers have been updated.
Right. Okie doke.
Okay, so it sounds like I need to contact Linksys support.
Right.
And ask them if they have an update or planning to put out an update for my EA6900 router.
Right.
For this Roka vulnerability.
Right.
Easy for me to say.
Easy.
Yeah. Okay.
Okie doke.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Have fun.
And
it is. It's a very complex topic, and security, it's one of the reasons security is hard.
And that's good that Andy's looking.
Yes, it is. It's very good. But that's the way you have to do it. You have to make sure that your individual router, and Andy is right, you got to go all the way down to the number, right? To the yep. model number.
And the version of that model, especially with Linksys.
What version of that model is installed and whether there's an update from that model and if a version and if that version is protected. So.
And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, if your devices are too cheap. So that $30 webcam you bought on Amazon probably won't ever be updated.
Right.
And so you don't want to buy that.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Hiya, Walter. What's up?
Hello all to you. Two quick questions, I hope. Number, going to the router deal. We use DSL. We run Linux. I checked on the router. It seems a firmware was downloaded, but I never did it. Do you think it's because Frontier is in control of the router and has been doing that for us?
Yes, theoretically, they should be doing that for you.
Okay, perfect.
Theoretically, they had better be doing that for you. If there's been an update over the last, say, week, or a few days anyway. So if you've gotten a recent update, then good for you, good for Frontier.
All right, great. Next question, then, is I like to look through DistroWatch. And recently there came up, I never saw before, was a Linux program, or I guess it is, of Android-X86, which you look at, says, oh, you can go ahead and turn your computer into an Android device.
Yep.
And they have it all there for, I guess they just recently came out with Nougat, but you can go back to Marshmallow, Lollipop, and KitKat. I've tried using the live CD for going all the way back to KitKat, but every time I try it on my laptop, it stops and says, kernel panic, or panic kernel, whatever it is. Can you give me an idea what that's happening?
Yes, a kernel. What was the name of that version of Linux again?
Well, it's Android-X86, which allows you to go ahead and turn your computer into an Android device.
A kernel panic means something has gone so drastically wrong that it can't figure out even how to fix it. It's basically thrown up its hands and says, I give up.
I was wondering if it's because it has a problem with my laptop, because I look at the number of devices that they've checked this on, and they look to be really ancient or maybe very newer laptops, maybe with a touch screen. The one I'm using with does not have a touch screen.
Any of that is possible. I have not really looked at it, and so I don't honestly know, but what happens is, in general, when you get a kernel panic, it means essentially something so strange has happened that I don't know what to say. So what you often get is, I don't know what these drivers are.
Okay.
I don't know what this hardware is. I can't figure out where the screen is, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And often enough, particularly with, 0.1 or 0.2 versions, you find that they haven't really done a lot of work with unusual driver sets or any of that sort of fare. And so it may just be that it's so new. Right? It was last updated, in August? So, you would think that if somebody's actively working on it, they're farther ahead of the game. But...
And I'm looking at the supported hardware list, and I'm seeing 2010s and maybe just sorted by date, maybe.
Yeah, so it is simply possible that they haven't got drivers for your hardware.
Okay. Mine's what I've tried it on was a Dell D610 laptop. It's a 32-bit, I chose the 32-bit ISO. And, again, I've gone all the way back to KitKat and said, doesn't want to do it. So I thought I'd best ask you to get an idea. So apparently...
How much RAM do you have?
1 gig.
Oh, yeah, man. Well, that may well be it.
Okay.
It just may not be able to install because it requires more. I haven't looked at the list myself, but it may require more than 1 gig of RAM.
Okay.
What was that model number again?
It was a Dell Inspiron D610.
610, all right. Because there's an Acer 3610 I typed in. There's too many 610s.
A lot of configuration.
Yeah, 135. 610, so let's add Inspiron. But yeah, it may be that your model just isn't supported.
Okay, very good. Thank you very, very much.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And here's... This story makes me shake my head. You've heard of revenge porn?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you and the... person of your choice have a relationship, and you send each other sexy time photos, nudes, whatever.
Yeah. Through the public internet?
Through the public internet.
Yeah.
That's first, right? But you then break up. One of the two of you is angry about it and posts your nude pictures for the rest of the world to see in revenge. And it's called revenge porn.
Mm-hmm.
And Facebook is used for that a lot. So Facebook is testing a new method to combat revenge porn. The strategy is that you upload your nude photos or videos to Messenger. Somebody at Facebook, pay attention now, somebody at Facebook looks at them, determines whether or not they are indeed possible targets of revenge porn, and then turns it into a hash, which is stored and checked against uploaded pictures.
How do you tell revenge porn from regular porn?
Yeah, really.
Well, the idea
can
is...
Can I have
if,
that job?
No. Yeah, no kidding. It's a million people suddenly looking on Facebook's website for job postings. Here's the deal. You decide that this is... You know, you sent that picture to your significant and now insignificant other.
Yeah, so at the time, it was regular porn.
It was regular porn. It was a loving expression of your sensuality to the other person. Now it's porn.
Yeah.
And so you decide, I sent this picture to such and so, and I don't want such and so to upload it to Facebook. So I will upload it first and get it into their database. But in between me uploading it and getting into the database, it gets looked at by some human being at Facebook.
Hmm. So you have to upload it hoping that...
Well, you send it to yourself on Messenger,
right,
which theoretically...
We'll mark it as being revenge porn if someone else
uploads
it.
And you mark it as revenge porn. It's a thing you do. There's a whole way to do it. And theoretically, no one else sees it except you.
And Facebook.
And anybody at Facebook.
So the cure for having nudes of yourself accidentally put on, or without your consent put on the internet, is to, with your consent, put them on yourself.
Right, right, okay. Right, right. To upload them, knowing full well that at least one person
is seeing it.
At Facebook is seeing that, and hoping that they don't then call in 8 or 10 other people.
Say, hey, look at this.
Or make a copy and pass it around. I personally think this is not the best thought out scheme that Facebook has ever had. And I have to admit, up until today, I thought that was a pretty low bar. But they have managed to lower it even farther.
Uh-uh.
Further?
According to the Engadget blog, it would totally not be a heartless tech bro who looks at it.
Totally not. Totally not. So if you want to, I just don't see how this is
going to work. Talk about going to the far side.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So what you basically do is say, I don't want anybody to ever see this photo, so let me send it to somebody to look at before they decide to turn it into...
There's been memes like that in cop shows where someone looking at images to stop explicit images on the site, you know, goes nuts from looking at explicit images all day long.
Right, right. And I do understand that it has to be vetted, because otherwise I could say I don't ever want to see another picture of Donald Trump on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So I upload one, and if it was automated, then suddenly that picture of Donald Trump would never be visible again on Facebook until somebody complained. And now it's just that much more work. Or Hillary Clinton or whoever it is you don't like. I don't care who it is. And then now it's just more work for Facebook. So by having a human vet it, it means that that sort of shenanigans won't happen. So I get that part.
Mm-hmm.
But they seem to have missed a whole section before that part, which is, I don't want anybody to see this picture.
Period.
Including you.
Oops.
So, yeah, I don't know. So, listen, folks, would you upload your nude photos to some random Facebook employee? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0414. 1.5. I don't understand that as a strategy. And I do understand it as a strategy in the sense that they've thought through not having political pictures or religious pictures or whatever uploaded. They've thought that through, good for them, but they skipped a step somewhere along the line.
You think?
So if we back up a step, how about everyone just don't put nude photos out?
Yeah, really.
Well, that's,
in case they
know,
get turned into revenge porn.
Right, right, right. Well, you know, you never think that. You think, oh, we're together forever, and it's blah, blah, blah.
One other story, you know, and talking about getting revenge, and that these folks that were into the Netflix thing.
Which Netflix thing?
That they were scammed in signing up, and, you know, the page looked like a real Netflix.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. We see that all the time.
And see, folks, what we're talking about is we've been telling you for years, you know, if you're getting these emails and everything else telling you to go to Netflix or wherever, your bank and everything else.
Or your account is disabled and you have to log in here to fix it.
Yes. Think twice. Pick up the phone and call. Because it, as they pointed out in this particular incident, it's so easy for hackers to go to the legitimate website, grab all the images, and make exact copies. Because nobody pays attention to the URL up at the top.
Right.
They're just looking at the actual page of the that they're going to.
Right.
And so many folks were suckered in to this Netflix signing up and giving out so much information. It was unbelievable. But it's out there.
We've seen a surge in fake Apple tech support lately in our store, and they're getting much, much better in their fake creating of a real Apple page. And it's terrible. We even had a customer, it was so frustrating. She was having trouble with her internet service, getting email, and they blamed it on Apple. That
of course,
her internet email wouldn't work, so they told her to call Apple, gave her a fake number.
Nice.
And I imagine the tech support at the ISP just Googled Apple tech support and found the first fake number and gave it to her. So then she called the fake Apple, who then wanted her to go buy an iTunes. Now here's another common scam: go buy an iTunes card and then read us the number off the back to pay for your tech support.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I got to talk about this one. There is a service called, there's a service from a company called NetSafe, and it's called Rescam, RE:SCAM. And what happens is you get what you know is an email scam. You send it to them. You just forward the email to them, and their AI engages the scammer.
Nice.
And wastes their time. It's amazingly good. That's
Wendy Wilcox. Was that 10 years ago now?
Yeah.
The early email scams from the Nigerian prince. You know, all you do is have to send us a finder's fee and we'll send you, $1 trillion. And engaging the scammer, getting him to stand in front of webcams at internet cafes. And I love the one line he said to the scammer, I admire you only taking 10% for your cut. When I scam people, I usually take 20%.
Yep. And if you really want to see some great stuff, there's an AI on the and you can see him on YouTube called Lenny. And Lenny pretends to be any one of a million people. And when Lenny gets the call, he keeps people on the line for 10, 15, 20 minutes. It's hysterically funny.
Oh, that one.
You may not drink water while you listen to Lenny.
Exactly, because the way he just kept leading them on and is acting as though he was saying one thing and they're telling him another. Oh, he does a good job of it.
Yeah, he's excellent.
He is. Very good. Definitely check out that one, though, folks.
Yeah. There's a whole series of them on TOAO.net is the guy on YouTube. Look up his channel, and you'll see all the Lennies. It's hysterical. TOAO.net, and I guess that's probably his URL as well, but I don't know if that's... Oh, there it is, yeah. There's Lenny. All right, so that their music there, that their music tells us that, well, we're done. We're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. Please call earlier and more often. Again, I want to thank all our veterans. God bless each and every one of you. Thank you very much. I want to thank Dave Enright for no reason whatsoever. I want to thank Steve Ray for less of a reason. I want to thank me because I'm amazing. Don't go away.
But there's no bias there.
There's no bias there at all. I do want to thank all our
callers.
Opinions
expressed.
Yeah, right. we'll be back next week. Don't go away. George is here to play the best German music you'll hear all week. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites and the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.